Hey, this is Matthew Craig of the Board Game Brothers. I am one of the brothers in real life and game designers in real life, but sadly, the other one, Jeffrey, is on vacation, which I guess isn't sadly now that I think about it. It's more like good for him. But that means that we do, in fact, have a special guest for this week for a middle of the month Good Stuffs episode. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Cut that part. Hang on. BGB, Good Stuffs. Hello, my name is Galen Wilson. I am part of the Board Game Designers in Real Life, although not actively part of these two, and I am a friend in real life. Yeah, it is wonderful to be on the podcast. I have been a... and I'm
you
really
actually cut out for
doing.
A second there.
Ah, darn.
So I didn't hear what kind words you had to say.
Well, that's probably good. But yes, I am the special guest because I am a friend. Nepotism always will get you where you need to go.
It's not really nepotism.
So hey.
If it's friendship, it's just friendship.
Well, listen, we have different words depending on what fields we're into, all right?
Sure. All right.
It's gotta be nepotism.
So this is a Board Game Bros Good Stuffs, of course, where we talk about a little bit of news and a little bit of what we've been doing and playing lately. This also is our chance to talk about video games, because we normally do board games, of course, and just all the stuff we don't have time to talk about during the rest of the month. So to go into news, first of all, there hasn't been a whole lot of board game news lately. I know Magic the Gathering announced a new Masters set, and they did so by mailing people a bunch of different full art promos. And
that's a pretty good marketing ploy on their part, honestly. That's pretty clever.
I will say, apparently this is the last Masters set for the foreseeable future, which I know a lot of people were getting burnt out by those sets, so who knows what this will end up being. But that's about it as far as board game news goes. Now, video game news, on the other hand, we just came out of... Well, yeah. So, I guess let's start with BlizzCon. So, we're going to completely ignore the elephant in the BlizzCon room, and...
I don't know what you're talking about.
Exactly. And so, for one thing, Blizzard announced Warcraft 3 Remastered. And
yes.
I'm actually really interested in this. Partially because I've never really played a RTS other than the little-known War of the Ring, Lord of the Ring RTS. And I'm really interested in doing Warcraft.
I have never been a huge RTS fan, so unfortunately this one might be passing me by. But I do have a fan who was very, very big into Warcraft 3. And they expressed, when we talked about this, they expressed excitement, but a whole just being very nervous about it.
Yeah.
They were very nervous that Blizzard might not do justice to their, I mean, basically their flagship game. But ultimately, though, I would say that he was very excited. Honestly, I'm pretty excited, too.
I know.
And I'm a big fan of when older games get remasters, just because, you know, giving a new generation the opportunity to play an old game is always a good thing in my book.
Yeah, and I know Warcraft 3 is pretty well known for its custom game modes in the, like, custom game community that revolved around the game. And
yes,
that's something I'm all for.
I mean, that was Dota, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Dota started
as a Warcraft 3 mod. And in that regard, the MOBA genre in general. But, like, there's also a lot of early tower defense games on Warcraft 3. Like, Element Tower Defense.
That one I didn't know.
I really like games that encourage making custom game modes. That's why Halo 3 and Halo Reach are such good party games for me. Because, like,
yes.
There's just so much stupid stuff you can do in them.
I remember playing, what was it? Wasn't it the zombie game where, yeah, when you got killed by a dude with a sword, you became
infection,
a dude with a
sword. Infection,
yeah. Infection, that's the one.
We always did infection, but the zombies have super speed and low visibility.
Oh, nice.
So it became more of a hide and seek most of the time. But we only played on one map. So that was nice.
Yeah. So, hey, Warcraft 3, other Blizzard stuff.
Yeah, so Overwatch released their new hero. I actually got a chance to play the new hero now because they officially released her. And that hero is Ashe, who has a very precise, almost sniper-like weapon. Very hit-scanny, where you shoot it and it's basically just goes in front of, like a railgun in Quake, where like you shoot it and then it automatically goes the distance to where it needs to be.
Right.
But
so would you say she is a sniper, or would you say that she isn't?
She fills a sniper role for sure. I think Overwatch is pretty loose with what people call snipers. She's
That's
not too
fair.
Different from McCree, who is already considered a sniper. But Ashe also has it's like a shotgun that does a huge amount of knockback. And it also pushes her away from the direction you're shooting.
Oh, the force of nature. Got it.
Yeah, that's what everybody compares it to, is Scout's force of nature. Because you can use it to gain a lot of height, like shotgun jumping.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then she has a skill that throws dynamite that you can shoot to set off early. I'm a big fan of stuff like that in these types of hero-based games. Skills where, like, it's a move that the hero's kit interacts with in a very understandable way.
Basically something that isn't just one button to do the entire skill, something that, you know, you can one button to do the skill, but then you can then interact with it with the rest of your
Yeah, kids. But it's not like it's one button to do the skill and another button to detonate it.
Looking at you, Junkrat.
Yeah. No, I mean, well, demo, man, but...
But
overall, I think she's a really fun hero.
That's good to hear. I have not played Overwatch in a very long time. I got sort of burnt out. I have been considering going back to it, but so I have not played Ashe. I can say that I wasn't excited when I saw the reveal trailer and when I heard her. Just she did not seem, even Hammond, who I absolutely despise, was interesting. But I've always said that the design of Overwatch the technical design of Overwatch kind of trumps like the character design and whatnot. Like it's always been more about how the game plays for me. So if she plays like a very interesting hero, if she fills a niche that needed to be filled, that's awesome.
Yeah, I can't say right now about if she fills a niche that needed to be filled, but she definitely plays interestingly. Like, for example, she reloads one bullet at a time, and you shoot one bullet at a time. So if you wanted, you could reload, shoot, even if you went from 0 to 1 bullet each time. Or you could shoot, you know, until you're at 0 bullets and then wait to reload the full amount.
Interesting. Yeah.
And then,
all right.
But then if you were to, she doesn't have an auto fire if you use her main fire. So like you have to mash it, but if you mash it, every hit after the first will be less accurate.
Yeah. So yeah. So I think I'm getting that she's sort of like the, what I'll call the like mid-range rifle class. Like,
yeah.
Yes. Sniper weapon, but like supposed to be used more as a mid-range class.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So that's about it for the, like, the Blizzard side of the news. The other big thing,
yes.
The other big info drop that happened recently was the Final Smash Direct.
Yes, Smash Ultimate, has its final roster, and I think I can definitely say we got everybody we were expecting to get.
Honestly, like, I with Smash and a lot of things nowadays, I try to wait judgment until I already have it in my hands. But I will say, even though nobody was expecting it, I am interested in Piranha Plant.
Yes. Yeah. No, I I kind of remember the I remember the hype around the last Smash, how everybody was like really, really tentatively excited, and then also kind of like, I mean, you know, everybody was kind of complaining about, you know, there was no Lucas, there was no Snake, there was no Wolf, and obviously we got Dark Pit instead of those three, and that was kind of the meme. But then it came out, and everybody like it. I mean, it's sort of with time, it's shown its faults, especially to the competitive community, yeah, who I am not part of. So I personally love the game, honestly. But like everybody, once it came out, ultimately was just as excited to play it. And that's kind of what I'm thinking about with Smash Ultimate is, of course, right now everybody's memeing about, you know, put Waluigi in the game and, oh my God, we got Piranha Plant instead. But I mean, give it, once it comes out, it's going to all melt away. It's going to all melt away, and everybody's going to realize that, oh crap, actually, Piranha Plant is a super interesting character. This is the hope, anyway.
Yeah. From what I've seen online, a lot of people have been welcoming of Piranha Plant. But, like, I mean, there are people that are disappointed that their insert character here didn't get in. I mean, like, yeah, I for sure am kind of sad that there's no Rhythm Heaven rep, but at the same time, I don't care because it's still a new Smash game with new characters, and, you know, I take what I can get.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I mean, the factor of DLC, like, there probably is going to be DLC for it.
Well, they already announced they're going to support it up through early 2020.
Exactly. And, like, I mean, usually that's a bad thing with a game, and I can technically criticize that, but I also know that, again, with Nintendo's track record, like, I mean, how much did the characters cost for Smash 4?
I don't remember. I mean, I think the standalone characters were like $5, but the packs that had like character stage and all that was more like 10 or 15. I really don't remember, honestly.
$5 for a new, I can understand that being nickel and diming, but
I don't think it's nickel and diming when you consider a fighting game.
Yeah, exactly.
Like people underestimate, I mean, even just in general, like video games take a lot of work. Fighting games are insane because like every frame has to not only be animated, but to look the way it will attack or feel like.
Yeah, there is a lot of technical, like there's a lot of game feel that goes into it, and also there's a lot of, you have to balance it across every other existing character.
There's a lot of precision
now. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Nintendo will get a pass on this one. Nintendo, unless they come out with Smash Direct Final 2 and they say, by the way, we're putting loot boxes in this and we're also locking half of the game out under an in-game microcurrency that you can pay money to get, I don't think people are going to turn on them, and I don't think that they're going to mess it up. I think that they're going to make another quality game, because Nintendo has kind of been on the top of their game since like what?
Since the Switch.
What was their last big failure?
The Wii U.
Yes, Wii U. And even the Wii U, I mean, come on.
It had Mario Maker, it had Smash 4. It still had some good games.
It had some good games, even if it was
lackluster.
Lackluster is the good word.
I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of people online that have gone into way greater detail than we even can.
Of course.
But yeah, the Switch has been from like the start for hitting the ground running.
I was part of the crowd that was very nervous when the Switch kind of originally came out, and it was, hey, it's the $400 Zelda machine. But no, I mean, oh gosh, the Switch has that I want. The Switch has Mario Odyssey, Breath of the Wild, obviously. It has Splatoon 2. The Switch has Cross Tag Battle, which I don't know if it's only on the Switch, is it?
No, it's on multiple systems.
It's on multiple systems, but it's like the Switch. The fact that the Switch is a AAA console that is a handheld, not necessarily a pocket handheld, but a handheld nonetheless, that is so amazing.
Yeah.
And, oh man. It's, yeah.
Yeah, it's very convenient.
I want a Switch.
And, you know, speaking Switch, of which, very... if you're okay with just going into the what we've been playing, that's a good segue into one game I've been playing. I have been playing The World Ends With You Final Remix, the remake of The World Ends With You on the Switch. So, sorry, you can.
But I was just going to mention that I do believe this was basically your favorite game when it was on the DS. So, I'm curious about your opinions.
Yeah. So, The World Ends With You, TWIWI for short, is one of my favorite video games of all time. I think right now it's like in contention with my favorite video game of all time, up there with The Witness. And TWIWI is such a good game. Like, every part of it, I feel like, is quality. And it, even more so with the Switch version, because the graphics are high fidelity and the audio quality is way better. Like, it's not super compressed. Which, The World Ends With You is one of those games where the soundtrack is, like, the music the characters would listen to in real life. So it's, like, hip-hop and J-rock and stuff. And electronic. And the gameplay... So, the original DS version, in combat, you controlled one character on the touchscreen and one character on the top screen using buttons. And obviously the Switch only has one screen, and so they have like an assist sort of system where doing a certain input will call your partner in and they'll attack something. And there's still elements of like multitasking and like having to focus on both characters, at least to play optimally. And I guess I was unsure going into it how I would feel. Because for me, that two-screen combat system was a huge part of the original. But I think it worked out fine. If anything, it made it more accessible. And there's sort of a joke, at least from what I can tell, with the community, that you can still do one person, two controllers. Because there's a co-op mode that gives one player more control over the partner with another Joy-Con. But, I mean... The things I like the most about the game still exist, which is like the story, the characterization, the themes, and the subtext. And if anything, this new version makes me want to go back and really dig in deep to it, because there's a lot to unpack. There's a lot of references to like the Chinese zodiac, which means I'll basically have to go to the library when I make my analysis of this game.
Oh man. actually, reeling back just a little bit, have you played on that co-op mode? Because I this is not a game I own, and this is not a game that I had owned before. I've heard only good things about it from the people who played it, but the one criticism I have heard is that co-op mode. I've heard that it doesn't work well.
See, I haven't played the co-op mode is the thing, and I haven't done it by myself or with another person. So like, I wouldn't really know.
Okay.
I know when I played it docked, one of my Joy-Cons was drifting to the right, so I ended up just doing it all in touchscreen.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, that's very minor complaints about basically a mode that isn't the main reason you buy the game either way. So yeah, like it really does sound like they have kind of hit a home run with this remake.
They added more content. There's a new post-game chapter that had a very heavy sequel hook. And it's so heavy, like, committal to the point where I almost feel like they have to have a sequel in the pipeline already, because, like it's committal. It's like, they're basically saying there will be a second game. You know, it's like, at the end
of the Avengers will return.
Yeah, it's like the Avengers will return. It's like, they're basically saying, yeah, there's going to be a game, because if there's not, it's going to be bad PR.
Maybe that's Nintendo's way of motivating themselves. Well,
it's Square that made the game, or to Square. Be fair. So, you know, they maybe can wait Nintendo 20 years.
Maybe it's Nintendo's way of motivating the only people who make video games.
I was going to say, you know, Square likes to take their time with their video games. Kingdom Hearts 3.
Hi there, Kingdom Hearts 3. You know, hang on. Actually, here's a question. So Wreck-It Ralph is going to be in Kingdom Hearts 3, and we've seen that Wreck-It Ralph 2 is going to the internet, so when are we going to get the internet level of Kingdom Hearts? I want Sora. I want Sora to have the laughy crying emoji face and be in a deep fried color palette. No, and attack with a Keyblade that looks like an okay hand. Thank you very much.
I was going to say, you know, Goofy would be the one with the laughing, crying face.
Oh, God.
Or Donald.
God.
Literally either of them, but not Sora.
Anybody but Sora. Sora's lame. He's got to be like, he's got to be like the Kermit sipping tea meme.
Yeah.
The tea lizard meme. So, hey, moving right along. Yeah. Is that it for Tweewee?
Just about, yeah.
I have been playing another video game. I suppose this might work for at least one more video game before we get into board games that we've been playing. But I have just last night finished Deltarune.
Oh yeah, Deltarune.
Made by the person who made Undertale, Toby Fox. He is, I mean, honestly, he's an absolutely wonderful player. And I'll say he makes a lot of really good content. So he made Undertale, which, I mean, if you don't know what that is, that on the internet for the last 2 years. And then he made Deltarune, which is basically, people are calling it Undertale 2, to some extent. It is not a sequel to Undertale, but it is definitely something to play after Undertale.
I think
I
think the best way to describe Deltarune is it's an anagram of Undertale.
Yeah, actually. Like literally.
Like the title really fits, yeah.
It is absolutely wonderful. You don't, I was kind of looking out through the entire game, and you don't really need to have played Undertale to play Deltarune, but you will appreciate it a whole lot more once you played Undertale.
Yeah, there's a lot of continuity nods. Not really continuity, but like a lot of Easter eggs.
Yeah, basically. I mean, like even just sort of the last section, and this isn't really a spoiler, the last section you kind of go back through the town and you get to interact with sort of everybody. And you get to interact with characters who, if you played Undertale, you'll definitely know. And it's just a really fun bit to do.
If anything, having played Undertale makes the ending of Deltarune even more confusing.
Yes,
and not just the very end scene, but that whole going through the town segment.
It really does. And here's the terrible thing that I thought of. Apparently the fans were so deep into making AUs for Undertale that Toby Fox decided, no, I'm going to one-up them. I'm going to make my own AU.
And make it canon.
Oh my god.
That's, yeah, basically.
I hate it, but that's kind of it.
I wonder if anybody accidentally made basically the exact same version, like the exact same universe as Deltarune. In like a monkeys writing Shakespeare type of thing.
Oh man, I want there to be like one like 12-year-old boy in Kansas City, who like just kind of completely randomly was like in his notebook and he's like, and then there's a they're like in school and like the main character is there. And like, but there's like this mean person who's sort of like the dummy because the dummy was really mad at Undertale. And then suddenly Deltarune comes on and he's like, no, I could have been great.
I could have been that. I could have made it canon. Wait, no, what I thought was really funny is like shortly before Deltarune came out, there was an interview that Toby Fox did with Zune. And another Japanese developer who I can't remember the name, I apologize. But Zune is, of course, the developer of the Toho series, Toho Project. Yep. And it was really funny because Zune and Toby Fox were just, like, geeking out about each other's games. And both of them were surprised about how popular their games were in the other's home country.
That's kind of great.
Yeah. It was interesting.
That does sound absolutely wonderful, honestly.
I had to read an abridged translated version because it was a Japanese interview, but yeah, it's it's funny. Just sort of the outcome of the interview.
Yeah.
Hopefully that means that we're going to get official English translations of the Toho games, though. Because apparently this was like the first time Zun had really known that it was that popular outside of Japan.
That actually makes quite a bit of sense now that that's stated. That does make a lot more sense why, you know, they're all... Why they're still kind of an obscure Japanese thing, even granted, in the States, even with their big user base in the States.
I was going to say, they are just now starting to be released on Steam, like the main series.
Yeah.
Which I quite like. I try to support my favorite developers as much as possible in realistic ways.
Yep. But so
I do
so
have, yeah, I, oh, sorry. I was just gonna say, I have one more video game I wanted to talk about.
I will. Okay. Yeah. Then we'll wrap up Deltarune really quickly by just saying, yeah, it is completely free to download. It is only chapter one, and, in a sort of like in a post, Toby Fox had kind of mentioned he really didn't know when it would come out as a finished product effectively. So this is sort of like an intro demo sort of thing.
It's like a pilot episode.
And honestly, like, if you at all liked Undertale, you definitely should play it. If you don't know what Undertale is and you don't like care for Undertale, I would still recommend playing it, seeing if it's your thing. It changes just enough about Undertale to make it a completely different experience.
Yeah. And I think, So the last game I want to talk about is Hitman 2, which just came out this week. And so I played Hitman 2016, the 2016 release of Hitman called Hitman. I played Hitman 1/Hitman 2016 this year. I had had it in my Steam library for a while, but I only got around to playing it recently, and I was instantly a fan. Because the level design is so, like, airtight, in-depth, intricate. It's so crazy how careful it is. And, like, there's so many different ways you can do a given level. And Hitman 2 is a lot of the same good stuff with some really welcome improvements. Like, you can hide in bushes and blend in with crowds.
Interesting.
So, like, if there's somebody who's suspicious of you and they're coming your way, in some maps you can just walk into a crowd of people and it's used as cover. And in some maps you can crouch in foliage and use that as cover. The crowd one is especially good, though, because... In Hitman 1, crowds were basically just like super guards because there wasn't any benefit to them. They would just see your crimes and then report to guards. So, like, it was in your best interest to stay away from crowds. But there's so many, like, spy films and action films where somebody disappears by blending in with a crowd. So it makes sense they would put in this mechanic.
Yeah, it makes thematic sense and it makes a lot more gameplay sense. It reminds me of the level in Hitman Blood Money that takes place during Mardi Gras, I think, which just has like a giant crowd that I think acts just kind of like this cover, like it acts as a place to get lost into if you're careful, and also like. You know, like, you can commit crimes practically outside their just outside their nose, and they won't notice, because why would a big crowd in a party care to look over to the really, really obscure alleyway, you know?
Yeah, that's my favorite level so far in Hitman 2 was the Miami level, which takes place at, like, an F1 race and slash also... a car company's like headquarters, and it's similar to this. It's just like it's a huge crowd of people, which actually, like I said, is useful this time, but there's also enough back areas to help sort of go along with that.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I would do want to say I have been working on an article going over some of the level design in Hitman 2. I'm planning on posting that to the Board Game Bros website. Gonna start doing like blog posts, article posts, whatever. So I'll make a tweet obviously when that gets set up, but just
is that a new prospect for the website?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah, Hitman 2 gets a thumbs up. Deltarune gets a thumbs up. Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe that's video games then?
Yeah. So, board games, I actually haven't been playing a whole lot other than what I played for the show.
And I, meanwhile, have played quite a bit. I quite regularly play board games with bros. Not
me.
Not literal bros.
Nor Jeffrey.
Yeah, not these kinds of bros. Like
not blood brothers.
Not blood brothers. We have not signed a blood oath with each other yet.
You have not drank in bowls of sake.
I do have a list here, a little list that I can just sort of go down. Let's start with the Dresden Files board game. The Dresden Files board game. It is a cooperative board game based on the Fate system, actually. And it is very interesting. I played it once, I will say, but I do quite like it. So the general gist of it is that you have a board that has basically two rows of six, and whatever case you're doing, you lay out a bunch of those cards onto those rows. And there's four types of cards. There's clues that help you solve the case. There's enemies that you have to defeat. Obstacles that prevent you from doing different things or they prevent you from doing different things or make your life harder. And there's one other type of card, I believe, that that is completely blanking on. The reason that they are in rows of six is because all of your cards are like things that deal with these cards, but they all have range as well as power. You'll have a help you solve a clue card. That's like, you know, seven clues or something like that. More realistically, it'd be like, oh, it's five clues, but it's range of one. So it has to be within just the first card in the row has to be a clue to solve. Some of them have, you know, like ping everything in an entire row, but they also only do like two or whatever. Thing that they use to switch it up a little bit is there's a couple things that they do. The first thing is they have the Fate dice, which if you haven't played Fate, basically it's a pair of dice that have pluses and minuses, and that's it. That is the entire system. I hear it's a good system. It's an RPG system, but
yeah, it's an RPG system meant for more for like. Like, instead of rolling based on numbers, you roll based on outcome. So, like, the pluses are a good outcome, the minuses are a bad outcome.
Yeah, it's. I've heard it's good. I have not played it. I'm partial to other systems, but I think that's a topic for another day, basically.
Yeah.
Or for later, whatever. The way that it works in this is you will have a card that's, let's say it's an attack card. You do damage to an enemy, and it has five, but it also has two fate dice on it. What that means is that you roll two fate dice and then you add or subtract whatever you got to that result. So technically that actually has a range of 3 to 7, whatever that card is. The other interesting thing that this does is you take actions by spending basically a fate pool of like 13, like I think 13 is like the max, and each card has a different fate cost. Don't actually play a card actively. You play the card. You don't actually draw cards each turn. You have a really limited deck and you don't draw a card each turn. You have to actually get an effect that lets you draw a card, depending on whether that's your character, whether it's like an obstacle you overcome, what have you. And this, I think, is... I feel like that is what really hampered our first game. We absolutely lost our first game. And I still say that I absolutely loved it, but half of the people who played it loved it, half of the people who played it hate it. It was me and one other person who loved it, and then two people who hated it. And I feel like we went into it with a mentality... We went into it what we were getting into, basically, and I feel like that is kind of, like... In this case, that was a hamper, and in just sort of in general with board games, that's a hamper, is if you don't know what you're getting into, you're probably not going to have a good time, and I'll talk about that with a different game. But yeah, we were kind of we weren't expecting a game where you didn't draw each turn, basically. A fate pool, and once that fate pool runs out, it's over. But you can discard a card, and you'll get however many fate points that is worth back. Or you can pass a turn, but that costs one fate point, so you have a ticking time element. And what really kind of hampered us originally was we had one obstacle that was like, it was like, if you play a card to get a clue down, then you get one less. And then we had another one that was like, all of the enemies take one more to defeat or something like that. And then we had an obstacle that said you cannot complete any other obstacle until you complete this one. And that one was all the way at the end. Cool. That one was at like the sixth slot on one of the rows. So we spent the entire game trying to deal with that pretty much until about halfway through when we realized we wouldn't. And we just ended up trying desperately to just clear the enemies and clear the clues. Then at the very end, the last interesting thing you can do, because you can actually end it at any time, end it at any point, and then with whatever your remaining fate pool is, you can buy a number of dice to roll. And that will, like, you can roll that number of dice and hope that you get enough to complete... thing, like each individual clue, each individual enemy. If you roll whatever you would need to defeat that enemy, you know, if you roll 3+ on something that would have 2 more health, then you complete it. After you do that, can you or do you score everything? So at the very end, you technically have something like, you technically have like one last ditch effort that you can do, but not something to count on. You really want to get as much done as possible with what you have before. So that was, yeah, that was Dresden Files. It is hard. It is better than that sort of rambling explanation makes it sound. And honestly, I had a whole lot of fun. I have to be in the mindset of this game is going to be very unfair. Like, it is a cooperative board game. They don't pull any punches because you're fighting. Like, once you lay out the board, that's it. That's all you're, like, that is what you're fighting. It doesn't throw any more random elements at you aside from the fate dice. So, like, you have to be in that mindset. And it was a lot of fun for me. I would love to play it again.
All right. So, I've only really been playing, one other board game than what we've been doing for the show, and that is Dominion, specifically Dominion Online, because there's a lot of quality of life stuff that the online version has, just like a number that automatically updates to show how many points you and your opponents are at.
Yeah.
It's useful. I don't think it makes that much of a difference over what could be done with paper. But so they have the new set Dominion Renaissance on there, and it's so weird. So what I like about Dominion is how like a single card can have a huge impact on the way a game plays out. Not necessarily when it's like that card is the only good card in the board, like Chapel or Rebuild, but there are some cards in this set that are really crazy, really interesting. Like, I want to say it's Artisan, which does, like, it's gain a card costing up to 4. All cards cost 1 less this turn. And so, if you're able to play multiple of those, then you are able to keep lowering the price of cards and then get more expensive cards with your future Artisans. And then they have the new mechanic of Villagers, which are a pool of tokens that you have. Some cards will say, like, +4 Villagers, +1 Villager. And it just means that on your turn, you can get rid of that Villager to gain an extra action when you play an action. So,
okay. So sort of like the cards that give you, like, just tangible gold, that, like, a gold pool to spend on future cards.
Exactly. And so Villagers are pretty interesting because, like, when they're involved, you are a lot more flexible with how you build your deck in regards to, like, terminal actions where they don't give you any actions. And there gets to be this whole other, like, whole other way to approach the deck building part.
Yeah.
And I'm only now playing with some of the some of the Dominion Nocturne cards just because I haven't gotten a whole lot of chances to play with the set in paper. And that also has some really crazy cards just because, like, some of them are just really weird effects. Some of them, like the Heirloom cards, where it's a card that you start with another card in your deck instead of a copper. As long as the first card is in the kingdom, those are really weird because, like, each of the heirlooms changes the way you approach that game, and it's a much needed, like, difference in starting deck, which is good sometimes.
It gives you, like, something to, it kind of gives you, like, a basis of strategy going into a game.
It's more so it just makes the game different just by existing, but not in a bad way. Like, there are a couple other things like this, like Colonies and Platinum from Dominion Prosperity. And then there are the, I think it's like Hovel, Ruin, and Ruin City. Yeah, I don't, it's something like that, where, from Dark Ages, where they're like different cards that replace the estates that have a few different properties. And those also, they're like, like I said, they change the game in a slightly different way from the get-go, but it's not a huge change to where it overtakes the game, but it's also not small enough that it's ignorable.
Yeah.
And that's good. So, overall, I've been having a lot of fun with that. I find that, like, as far as competitive games go, it's one of my favorite ones to just queue up online and play. Just because rounds can go pretty quickly, but they're still interesting. So, yeah.
Yeah. And Dominion Online is completely free to download, right?
Well, so it's browser-based, and you can play for free online. If you don't have any sets, but your opponent does, then it will use your opponent's sets. So, like, And, but it's pretty cheap to get So the owning the sets is subscription based, but it's really cheap. I think I ended up paying like $30 US for the subscription for a year. Which, if you play it a lot like me, then it's fine. If not, then try to find a friend or somebody online who's willing to play some games that already has the sets. So
yeah. Yeah. That's awesome to hear, and I'm glad. It is actually super cool that, I mean, Dominion has been out how long now?
A while. And
has it been a decade? Is probably the big question.
I don't think so. I think it's close though.
Kind of background check that while we're here. But
I'm really not sure. But so, really cool thing about Dominion is Donald X. Vaccarino, the game's designer. He posts a lot of articles called, like, The Secret History of Dominion, which are just a behind-the-scenes look at his design process for each game, or each expansion. And I think that's really cool that he's willing to go through such, like, an explanation of design, because, I mean, it's always cool when a game designer is open to teaching other people about game design, but to do it with, like, your own game is always a cool thing, too.
Yeah.
Because it's like you're, you know, you're showing people under the hood kind of how it ticks, and it can kind of be, to me at least, the idea feels a little weird or, like, embarrassing at times, just because you're kind of nervous as to, like, how will people react to your specific thought process? But at the same time, as somebody who reads these, it's always really cool to be able to study how they approach problems and problem solving and stuff like that.
So according to the Wikipedia article from Dominion, which, by the way, is not straightforward with when it was released, because apparently this actually has quite the history even before.
I was going to say, Board Game Geek says 2008 for the first publishing. Yeah, 2008. So it has happy 10th year birthday, Dominion.
Happy 10th birthday. You can drink milk.
Yeah.
A family show, I've been told.
That's cool.
So, but yeah, it is awesome that Dominion is still kind of going strong, even like 10 years later. And I'm glad to hear that the newest set is actually really good.
Yeah. Let's see. Did you have any other board games to talk about?
Yes, I do, actually. Okay. Here's one that we both played so that we can both talk about it. Tyrants of the Underdark.
Oh, yeah. I want to know what your opinion on this is.
I quite like it, actually.
Okay.
It's a scandalous thing to say. I don't know.
I mean, I'm not going to shame you for your enjoyment of a board game.
I suppose that's fair. Yeah, no, I like it. And there's a somewhat specific reason I like it. I have a friend who has every expansion of DC Deck Builder. So I've played a lot of DC Deck Builder, and builders, I think they're fun. However, I do think that there is an issue, at least specifically with DC, but it's an issue that I can see in other games, where you've got three phases, right? You've got the first third of the game where everybody is on equal footing, more or less. And gets kind of a lucky drop to begin with, but like it's pretty much equal footing. You've got the second third of the game where everybody realizes who is the big problem. Like there's one person who has been kind of spiraling. And then you've got the third third of the game, the last third, the ultimate third, where everybody has now been ganging up on that one player, so there's no way they're going to win, which means that whoever was in second place immediately starts spiraling out of control again, but way too late for anybody to do anything about it, and then they win.
Sounds like Munchkin.
Actually, yeah, that is another issue. Like, that's an issue that is very much shared with Munchkin, where everybody just sort of uses all of their, oh, crap.
Like really a lot of these like zero sum multiplayer competitive games have this problem.
Yes. And I won't say that there isn't any of that in Tyrants. However, I do think that the board element, the territory control element, helps to mitigate it, because it means that if somebody is spiraling out of control when it comes to the deck builder portion, that means that you can focus on something else. Like, you can focus on more on the board. You can focus more on spies. You can focus more on something else to give you the edge over them. I really like that. I really like that, you know, it's possible for somebody to keep spiraling, but...
mean snowballing.
But the way that the game kind of like lets you sort of circumvent them snowballing is what kind of makes it for me.
Yeah,
I really like that. I really like the territory control a lot. I like the mind games that comes along with it, because I play with the people who very much get into the mind games aspect of it, and I quite like Tyrants.
You play with people that go to the Yomi level overflow, which is what I call it when you outguess people so much that the best play is to not think about outplaying other people.
I love that because, yes, actually, I kind of do. I can play a game where, like, three players are absolutely at each other's throats and one person is completely not into the game at all, basically. Or not into that aspect of it at all, and just kind of stumbles along to victory, yeah. And nobody realizes.
So, Tyrants of the Underdark, I am okay with. I think what I do like about it is that it does have multiple ways to play, so even if you're falling behind in the deck builder part, you can still sort of, you know, focus on the territory aspect, which... I don't know if I've talked about Clank on this show before, but I really dislike Clank because everything was too interconnected that if you failed in one portion, you would fail in the others. And but Tyrants of the Underdark, I think, did that better. Though, backpedaling a bit to when you mentioned DC Deck Builder.
Yes.
So in our Mystic Veil episode, I mentioned how a lot of deck builder games play to like this natural tendency to want to play cards and draw cards and like that being a very intrinsically fun thing for the most part. Yes. I think that's part of why Cryptozoic's deck builders caught on so much with like people who weren't heavy hobbyist gamers is, I mean, obviously the characters and licenses helped, but I think it also helped that like their deck builders are designed around playing a lot of cards and buying a lot of cards and drawing a lot of cards and all of that being good.
It all meshes with each other to be very satisfying to get on your turn, basically.
Basically, yeah. In like other deck builders that I personally like more almost punish you for buying too many cards. At least Dominion, for sure, has this element of like you don't want to buy too many cards or buying a card every turn isn't necessary, you know, even though it does something shiny. Yeah. But I think it works in the Cryptozoic deck builder's favor because of the fact that, I mean, it is just a naturally fun thing. Yeah. If those are the entry level deck builders, it fits fine.
I've only really been on the winning side of a DC game twice or three times, maybe. But the times that I was, it was an absolute joy to get to my turn, basically.
Yeah. 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 I mean, that's.
Yeah. But so yeah, I don't enjoy DC. I just have started to notice like the pattern of play, and I feel like Tyrants does a lot to kind of circumvent that pattern, because it's like, oh, is somebody dominating on the board? Okay, I can just start promoting things to my pile and, you know, try to win through getting a whole bunch of points through that way. Or, oh, is somebody promoting? Well, then they're not focusing on the board. I can start trying to go for territories. I find it a lot of fun. Any specific criticisms you've got for it?
For Tyrants, I don't know. I'd have to really replay it again if I wanted to criticize it heavily, because it's been a while since I last played it.
That's fair. Oh, hey, we have another special guest. It's my cat who has decided to join me.
Your cat. My dog was in my room a little bit, but then she ran out, and by ran I mean walked out because she's old.
Oh, boy.
Is there any other games you want to talk about?
I did mention before with Dresden Files that there was something else I had wanted to talk about, which I believe that was what's it called? Cosmic Encounters, which I've played once and have had a really bad experience with.
Okay.
I'll be very brief on this one. Cosmic Encounters, I do want to play again. The strength in Cosmic Encounters is that no two games will be the same. at all. You play as an alien race. You have a special, a really special ability with the alien race. The base game is you got five planets. You've got four ships on either planet, I believe. No, five ships on either planet. And your goal is to colonize four other planets in other people's solar systems. That's, so,
yeah.
Yeah, like there's a very simple kind of like warring system, which I won't get too into. The reason that I hated it is because the aliens are not balanced, very intentionally so. I was playing somebody who, if they lost, I believe, or yeah, if they lost, they got ships out of the warp, because your ships actually don't die. They just go to the warp if you lose. So like if they lost or if they won, I believe. No, if they won, they got ships out of the warp. Except that somebody else who was playing the Void, who did destroy ships when they lost, or when the other team lost, which meant that my ability was absolutely useless.
Yeah. That always feels bad when your faction or your identity or ability is completely hard countered and made moot.
Yes. Yeah, and that's... it was a very bad intro game. I would like to play it again to have more opinions on it. But, because like I do feel like... And I feel like this was a mindset thing, was like I was going in with the mindset of, you know, oh my god, they've balanced all of these. Like DC Deck Builder has just at least 150 heroes now, and all of them generally are kind of balanced even when they're not within their sets. Like they have their own, like unless it's very specifically something for their set, they generally are balanced. And so I was kind of in that mindset, not in the mindset of, no, this is going to be an inherently different game each time because there are going to be objectively better ones for each game, which I can dig, but I would need to replay it to actually be in that mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
All right. Well, it's looking like we're about at the almost the hour mark, so might as well wrap this up.
Yep.
Is there anything you want to plug before I get into my plugs?
Unfortunately, I don't have a whole lot to plug at this moment. I'll have to, if I ever do another guest episode, I would probably have to have plugs. I suppose you can follow me on Twitter, which is at Galen Wilson, except it's spelled GALENWILS0N. Because the other one was taken. Yeah, if you want to follow me on Twitter, that's great. I don't tweet, but you can do it.
All right. So on the other hand, you can also follow us on Twitter at BG Broscast. And we also have a Facebook page by the same name, BG Broscast. You can get updates on new episodes, current episodes, future episodes, and ideas for episodes. You can send us recommendations or comments. We actually got a recommendation from a listener for a game to play, so I will definitely make an effort to play the game soon because, I mean, you know, it's cool that it's cool that people recommended a game to me. So other than that, I mean, you can talk with us, you can do that. You can also go to our website at bgbcast.com. That is bgbcast.com, where you can look at all our episodes. We have tags in the descriptions of episodes, so if we talk about a game that we mentioned in this, then you can probably click on the tag and see the other episodes where we talked about it. And that's also where I will be posting that article when I finish it. Let's see. Awesome. I have been streaming on Discord streaming on Twitch. I have a Discord in the channel description. Streaming on Twitch at twitch.tv/twack. That's twitch.tv/twak. I stream from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Central Time on weekdays. I haven't been able to do it this week for a couple reasons, but next week I should be back in the full swing of things. And like I said, through there you can find our Discord where you can talk with us, chat with us, talk with other people who watch the stream or listen to the show or etc. Talk about games, pop culture, media, etc. You name it. And awesome. Hopefully next week we'll have Jeffrey back on as well, even though I will once again say thank you for coming on, Galen.
Thank you very much for having me. I would love to do another episode like this in the future. Now, is that every plug?
Yeah, I think so.
Then allow me to outro today's very special episode with a song.
Oh no.
Board game bros, they're brothers in real life. Board game bros, hopefully they don't fill you with strife. If you don't like board games, you can get out. You don't have the enough mustard clout. Board game bros.
Galen does not speak for us. If you don't like board games, you can still come in and stay in and whatever. And with that, I will say thank you for listening.
Thank you very much.